And I have the privilege, I suppose it's a privilege, of finishing up the last few verses of the book. This is the end of the series on Malachi. It's the end of the book of Malachi, and of course it's the end of the Old Testament as well. But it's not the end, it's never the end of what God is doing. So as we look at these remaining verses, let's remember that. So this is how the book ends. Remember the law of my servant Moses, the decrees and laws I gave him at Horeb for all Israel. See, I will send the prophet Elijah to you before that great and dreadful day of the Lord comes. He will turn the hearts of the parents to their children and the hearts of the children to their parents, or else I will come and strike the land with total destruction. So just take a moment to look at those verses, speaking of remembering, because they're not going to appear again this afternoon. So if there's something you want to get from them, take a moment to look at them now. So as we get to the end of the series, it's probably an appropriate point to recapping of the series. And if you want a comprehensive recapping of the series, then you can ask Oz, because last week's sermon, when he spoke on the last kind of passage, prophetic warning of Malachi, really, he gave, I thought, a good sort of overview of the book so far. So I'm just going to tell you, go and listen to Oz's sermon last week if you didn't hear it, if you want a recap of where we're up to, because we are at the end of the book. And when I started, I preached the first sermon on this book, and when I spoke, I said it kind of, the book has this feel of God's frustration. He's tired of all of the ways in which the people of Judah have turned their back on him and failed to keep his commandments. And it's like he reaches the end of this book and he sort of shuts the book, and this is the end. God's going to be silent for all this time. But in those verses we just read, there is a glimpse of hope. The prophet says, I will send Elijah. Or rather, God says, I will send Elijah. A prophet's coming who's going to turn the hearts of the children to their fathers and the hearts of the fathers towards their children. He'll shake things up. He'll restore relationships. If you remember, that's one of the things the people of Judah weren't so good at, was protecting and guarding and nurturing their relationships with one another. So this is what the prophet is going to do. And the end of the book is, you know, so listen. When this guy comes, listen to him. Because if you don't listen, well, it's going to be bad. But in the meantime, when that book is finished, God goes silent. It's not that God didn't do anything. I hope you remember from previous sermons that there is a 400-year gap between the end of Malachi and the beginning of the New Testament. And it's not that those 400 years were quiet, low-key. There were a lot of things going on in those years, but there were no prophets. There were those who claimed to act on God's behalf. There were all kinds of crazy things going on. There were those who created miracles and things like that. But there was no one who came and said, this is God speaking, and I'm going to explain what's happening and why it's happening and help you make sense of everything that's going on. There was nothing like that. But as I said, it wasn't a particularly quiet period either. It's known as the intertestamental period, which is a bit of a mouthful, but it means, you know, the period between the Testaments, the Old and the New Testament. It's fairly, you know, don't let anyone tell you that theologians and biblical scholars are overly complicated all the time. Sometimes they, you know how to sum something up. So the intertestamental period is that period between the Old Testament, the end of the Old Testament, the beginning of the New Testament. And those of you who know your history will know that it was a crazy period in terms of the things that happened for the nation that was Israel in those times. The Old Testament closes with Persia being sort of overseeing, in charge of the nation, and then this guy comes along who is a statue of Alexander the Great. who some of you will have heard of. And of course, he conquered the Persian Empire, inherited all their land, and that includes the land where Israel was. But then, those of you who know the history also know that when Alexander died, he died without an heir, and his empire was split into four. And those four empires warred with each other over Alexander's territory. And the land where Israel was passed between two particular empires. And you'll know also that in that period, I'm sure you all know this, that there was an attempt by the Greeks to kind of crush the Jewish faith. There was persecution of the Jews and the kind of saying, well, you know, we Greeks, we've got the best religion, obviously, you all better get on board. But the Jews didn't like this. And a particular family of brothers called the Maccabees led a revolt, an armed revolt against sort of the Greek powers that ruled them, the Maccabean revolt. And even more incredible is that they won. This armed uprising beat sort of this mighty nation, and this nation of Israel was independent for about 100 years in this period, until they fell into a civil war and two warring sides in the country, and one of the sides invited a Roman general called Pompey the Great to come and help them out and win the war. And he came and he helped them win the war, and he said, okay, this is quite a nice place you have here, I think we'll keep it. And the land sort of fell under the rule of the Roman Empire. And that is the world into which Jesus was born. So there are all kinds of things going on. There were rebellions and empires rising and falling and all kinds of things like that. But during this period, God says nothing. God goes silent. And I wonder, if you were living in that time, those 400 years between the Testaments, how difficult would you have found it, do you think, to hold on to the promises of God in the Old Testament, particularly the end of the promises here in Malachi? I am sending a prophet. I am going to send someone who will shake everything up. Would you have found it difficult to hold on to those, or would you have found that quite easy? Well, I think it would have been hard. I think it would have been really hard to hold on to God's promises during a period where sort of God is silent, where there are no prophets coming and telling you what's going on. And I'm fairly confident it would be hard. And I am fairly confident to say it would be hard, because I think we've all had that experience. We've all had those moments in our lives where it feels like God has gone silent. And it's not that life is just cruising and easy or anything like that. There could be crazy things going on, and yet in the middle of it, it feels like God is silent. We've all had, I think, those intertestamental periods, those in-between times. Me, myself, I have just come out of one of those in-between times. It didn't last for 400 years. It lasted for 4 years. So it felt like 400 years during that time. When Ruth and I came back, 4 years ago, we came back to the UK. We've been in Australia for 8-9 years. And we've been part of an incredibly challenging but incredibly rewarding and fruitful ministry in Australia. But I wasn't in the best shape when we came back. I was exhausted. I was worn out physically, emotionally, mentally. I needed a rest. I needed a break. And when you need a break, where do you come? You come to Canterbury. That's what everyone does, isn't it, when you need a rest? So that's what we did, Ruth and I. But I soon became restless, because I wasn't really doing much at that time. Well, that's not true. I was doing quite a lot. I was looking after the house and the children. And as the months kind of rolled on and became into years, I was getting involved in other things. I was doing a bit of preaching and speaking here in this church. I was doing a bit of writing. I was meeting up with people. I was doing all kinds of things, good things, things that were worth doing. But still, I had this sense of being kind of in limbo, in an in-between time, feeling like, this is all good, but this is not enough for me, God. This isn't where I want to be. This isn't what I want to be doing. And all the time I was coming to God saying, What should I be doing, God? And God was silent. Ruth and I, we prodded a few doors to see if they would open. Nothing opened. And all the time I'm sort of growing in this sense of rest is saying nothing to me, something, but nothing is coming along. And all the time God is saying nothing to me other than maybe just, no, keep going. Just keep doing what you're doing. Well, that's not enough, God. That's not enough. This is not enough. And that's certainly not enough to tell people, because some of you know that one of the worst things about being in a place like that is not necessarily your struggles, but it's all the people around you who say, oh, what are you going to do, do you think? What are you going to do next? And the only honest answer you've got is, I don't know. That's not a very good answer. People don't really like that answer. Now, if when we'd landed on the sort of Heathrow, those 4 years ago, there'd been a prophet on the tarmac waiting for me to say, James, don't panic, don't worry, this is what's happening over the next 4 years. It's going to look like nothing's happening, but stuff is happening. This is what's happening. This is how long it's going to last. That would have been fine. I could have coped, because the truth is, if you're going through a difficult time, if you're going through a struggle, if you know why it's happening, if you know how long it's going to last, all those things, they help you get through it. What makes it even harder to get through a difficult time is when God is silent and you have no idea how long it's going to last. And you say, God, how long is this going to happen? How long am I going to be doing this for? Silence. You say, okay, God, is there anything you want me to do? Anything I should be doing? Isn't this what I'm supposed to do? Offer my life to you? Anything particular you want me to do? I'm open, God. Anything? Silence. Well, okay, God, I understand you're doing something here. You're doing something in this situation. Could you just let me know what it is? That would be great. Silence. That's a difficult time to be in. That's a difficult place to be in. The people of Israel were in that place for 400 years. But you and I, we've been in that place before, I think. I think it's not just me. It's not just me who's been there. I'm fairly certain of that. Those in-between times, those intertestamental periods, those are hard times. They are difficult places to be. And it happens. Those past 4 years for me, that's not the first time I've been in that place. And I'm fairly confident it won't be the last. So what do you do in that time? How do you get through? How do you survive a challenge like that? Well, Malachi actually tells us. These are God's last words of the Old Testament. I want you to just remember that, okay? This is the last thing God says before he shuts the book closed. These are important words. It's almost like God says, all right, I've got one piece of advice to give you before it goes silent. This is it. So listen up. This is important. Okay, and God's last words, how to survive those intertestamental periods, how to get through, not just to Judah, but his words to you and to me as well, are this. God's last words. Come on. Remember, we got there. Remember, this is what God says. He says to the people of Judah, remember. He says to them, remember the law that I gave to Moses at Horeb, he passed on to you. Remember that. And we know that Judah, as we've been hearing over the weeks, Judah had not done very well at remembering the law. They'd kind of abandoned chunks of the law. They weren't following through on their commitment to God. But the law is not just a list of, commands, things that God wants you to do. The law is filled with all kinds of things. It's a lot like God gives his people a list. Here is my law, remember to brush your teeth, remember to make your bed, all those kind of things. The law's filled with stories about who God is and what he's done. The law is filled with calls to remember. The law is filled with instructions on how to celebrate the things God has done. Every year, the festivals of Passover and the Festival of Weeks and the Feast of Tabernacles, all these things are, do this every year to remember who I am, remember how I've saved you, remember what I've given to you. These are all in the law. that God tells his people to remember. And it's more like God giving his people a list, you know, remember to brush your teeth, remember to make your bed, remember that picnic we went on last year. That was a fantastic time, wasn't it? Remember that time where you got into trouble and I helped you get out of trouble. Remember that. That's what the law is like, and that's why God's command is remember it, because by remembering the law, his people are remembering who he is and what he's done and how he's been with them and how he saved them. Even the promise that God gives his people, the promise of a prophet, I'm sending Elijah, only makes sense if you remember the stories about who Elijah is. If you remember the stories about what he did and how he shook up the people of Israel and how he helped the people turn back to God of this kind of thing. And who is this in order to get the benefit of this kind of thing? And who is this Elijah? There's been a lot of discussion and debate over the millennia or over who this Elijah is and was. But I think Luke, who wrote the Gospel of Luke, he knows who Elijah is. He's fairly certain who Elijah is. He wrote this about John the Baptist. He will bring back many of the people of Israel to the Lord their God. And he will go on before the Lord in the spirit and power of Elijah to turn the hearts of the parents to their children and the disobedient to the wisdom of the righteous, to make ready a people prepared for the Lord. Luke is in no doubt that the Elijah who's promised at the end of Malachi is John the Baptist, the one who is preparing the way for God, who of course prepared the way for Jesus, the fulfillment of the law, the fulfillment of God's promises. And so our hope, or Israel's hope, can only be grounded if in the trust you have for the one who is making the promise. A promise made by someone you don't know, well, you can't be certain how trustworthy it is. But a promise made by someone who you know, who you have remembered has fulfilled their promises in the past, becomes a promise you can hold on to. It's as if someone comes to you and says, I'm going to swim the English Channel next week. If you don't know who this person is, you don't know anything about them, you can say, okay, well, thank you for that information. We'll just wait and see what happens. The jury's out. But if someone comes to you and says, I'm going to swim the English Channel next week, and it's someone that you remember has swum the English Channel 100 times last year, then when they come to you and say, I'm going to swim the English Channel, you say, okay, I accept that. It's as good as done, because you've remembered what they've done. You've remembered their history. So how do you remember? In these in-between times, in these moments where God is not as chatty as you'd like him to be, when you're waiting for him to bring you into something, waiting for him to make something clear, how do you remember that your hope is based on something other than, well, I just hope it turns out all right? What do you have in your life that helps you remember? Here's a quote. Some of you may have forgotten, but we badgers remember well. Does anyone know where that's from? Oh, we had a very quick answer. Oh, yep. Oh, that's a really good guess. Lion, the Witch and the Wardrobe. It's actually from Prince Caspian, which is the next book in the series, the Narnia series. Yeah, but excellent. It's a comment made by a badger called Truffle Hunter. It's not an entirely sort of pointless quote to put up here. There is a reason for the picture of the badger as well, which I'll mention in a minute. But the question is, how do you remember? What do you have in your life that reminds you of who God is and his faithfulness? So that when you have those times of silence, you have hope that it's not always going to be this way. Now, I like to write things down. I have been writing things down for a long time. I have a stack of, I guess, notebooks, journals at home that stretch back over 20 years. And that's incredibly helpful resource for me. When I'm going through a difficult time, I can reach back into the past and pull out memories of what God said and what he did. And particularly, I can remember, and this is something crucial for me to remember, is that when I am in a difficult place, when I am struggling, God has never left me there. That is crucial for me to remember. And I have that. I have that written down. And it didn't, these past 4 years, don't be confused or misled. They weren't easy. It doesn't necessarily make it easy to bear. It doesn't necessarily mean that, I was happy and joyful all the time. I certainly wasn't. It doesn't make it any less frustrating for me or for those around me. But what it meant is that I had something to base my hope on. I wasn't just clutching at straws. I could say, no, this has happened before and God came through last time. And that becomes a foundation on which you can have hope in those moments when God is silent. You don't have to write things down. Not everyone finds it particularly helpful to write things down, but you have to have something. You have to have something in your life that helps you remember in those times where God is silent, where it seems like you're struggling and there you don't know how long you're going to be here and you don't know what's happening. There was a church in Australia that we knew of that every week they used to have someone up the front in their service who would tell the rest of the congregation how God had answered a prayer for them in that week. And as a part of that, they would take a stone and they would place it at the front of the church. And this would happen every week, and they were building like this pile of stones. And that meant you would go into that church and you would see that pile of stones, and that pile of stones would remind you God answers prayer. A picture of the badger. I had a friend who was going through a difficult time, and he put a picture of a badger on his desk. Not because he likes badgers, but because it reminded him of the stories of Narnia and the books that C.S. Lewis wrote. And particularly the idea that in The Lion, the Witch and the Wardrobe, there's a scene where the beavers are talking to the children and explaining that Aslan, the lion, has landed and he's coming and is sort of overthrowing the White Witch. And the badger for him, this picture of a badger, meant help is coming. It reminded him that help is coming. And he had that there on his desk. When I preached this morning, I had people coming up to me afterwards telling me of various things that reminded them. And it reminded me of something else. It reminded me of another friend of ours who went to visit Israel. And while he was visiting a place called the Valley of Elah, which is where David fought Goliath, he went to the stream that's mentioned in there and he found some stones, like the ones that in the biblical story it says David picked up and used to slay Goliath. And he brought them back to Australia and he would give them to people who were facing a struggle in their life as a way of remembering that God is bigger than any struggle we face. I am an advocate for memorizing the Bible. It's not easy, it's not always pleasant. And it's kind of, I think it's probably gone out of fashion a bit in this day and age because it's so easy when you've got the Bible on your phone. You don't need to memorize it because you've always got it with you. But I really believe that it makes a difference to have it not on your phone or not in the Bible before you, but to have it up here in those dry periods, those times where God is silent. I really believe it can make a difference. We sing a lot of songs. Songs are usually easy to remember. Maybe you have songs that remind you when you're struggling of who God is and what he's done. It doesn't matter what it is. Maybe we should tell more stories to each other. We should have times where we share stories of what God has done in our lives so that when I'm struggling, when I'm going through a difficult period and God seems to be silent, I can hold on to someone else's stories. And they can remind me of who God is. Like I said, it doesn't matter what it is, but we need to do it. We need to find a way to remember. This is what God left his people with. before the book closed, before he went silent for a while. Remember who I am. Remember what I've done. Remember Elijah. He's coming. Are you ready for those periods of silence? Because they happen, as I said. And as I said, I don't think it will be the last time it's happened to me. And if you're not experiencing one at the moment, you may have one coming for you in the future. Are you ready for it? What do you have in your life that you can hold on to while you're waiting for the promises of God to be fulfilled? Let's pray. Father, I thank you for the journey we've been able to go on, looking through the book of Malachi, a book that is not particularly familiar to many of us. Lord, I thank you for the things you've brought out of the book for me, and hopefully for your people as we gather here together. I pray, Lord, for those who are in their own in-between time, their intertestamental period, Lord, where it seems like you aren't speaking. Father, I pray you may bring to their mind stories and memories, Lord, that remind them of who you are and what you've done. And Father, I pray for the rest of us, Lord, that we will use these times where we feel like you're at work. We'll use these times to build up those memories. Answered prayers, stories of encounters with you, things you've done for us. Lord, help us to store these away, to become a stockpile, to help us through those times where you are silent, where you are not giving clear instruction and clear guidance. Father, I pray you'll help us to support each other through those times. Amen.